This is the policy of the United Lodge of Theosophists, wherever and however it is situated. Declaration. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy, and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. To live up to this policy, the Philadelphia United Lodge of Theosophists has two weekly meetings. This Sunday morning meeting from 11 to 12, the doors open at 10:30, and it is a series of talks and discussions. For next Sunday, October 9th, there's a panel, The Three Objects of the Theosophical Movement. This morning, it is a lecture, The Theosophical Movement Throughout History. These are under the October umbrella of Theosophy and the Theosophical Movement. You may, if you haven't already, pick up an October, November, December periodical. On Wednesday evenings, we open at 5:15 for a reference library, and it is open until 7:15, just before the class. The class is from 7:30 to 8:30, and we will be starting this Wednesday night with The Key to Theosophy, which we will continue to study all the way through June. The material is available on the usher's table of what we will be dealing with this coming Wednesday, which is really the introduction to The Key to Theosophy. The work done at this lodge, or any United Lodge, is done on the basis of voluntary donations of time, of service, and of money. If you care to make a monetary donation, you may do so at the book table, or there's a small box in the hallway. Every donation is gratefully received and is only used for the purpose of keeping the building open. Now, for this morning's topic, a reading has been selected. It's a quote from the SD in the text of The Key to Theosophy. Those who believe in karma have to believe in destiny, which from birth to death, every man is weaving thread by thread around himself, as a spider does his cobweb. And this destiny is guided either by the heavenly voice of the invisible prototype outside of us, or by our more intimate astral or inner man, who is but too often the evil genius of the embodied entity called man. Both these lead on the outward man, but one of them must prevail. And from the very beginning of the invisible affray, the stern and implacable law of compensation steps in and takes its course, faithfully following the fluctuations. When the last strand is woven and man is seemingly enwrapped in the network of his own doing, then he finds himself completely under the empire of this self-made destiny. This law, whether conscious or unconscious, predestines nothing and no one. It exists from and in eternity truly, for it is eternity itself. And as such, since no act can be co-equal with eternity, it cannot be said to act, for it is action itself. It is not the wave which drowns the man, but the personal action of the wretch who goes deliberately and places himself under the impersonal action of the laws that govern the ocean's motion. Karma creates nothing, nor does it design. It is man who plants and creates causes, and karmic law adjusts the effects, which adjustment is not an act, but universal harmony, tending ever to resume its original position, like a bough which, bent down too forcibly, responds with corresponding vigor. If it happens to dislocate the arm that tried to bend it out of its natural position, shall we say it is the bough which broke our arm, or that our own folly has brought us to grief? Karma has never sought to destroy intellectual and individual liberty, like the god invented by the monotheists. It has not involved its decrees in darkness purposely to perplex man, nor shall it punish him who dares to scrutinize its mysteries. On the contrary, he who unveils through study and meditation its intricate paths and throws light on those dark ways in the windings of which so many men perish owing to their ignorance of the labyrinth of life, is working for the good of his fellow men. Karma is an absolute and eternal law in the world of manifestation. And as there can only be one absolute as one eternal, ever-present cause, believers in karma cannot be regarded as atheists or materialists, still less as fatalists, for karma is one with the unknowable, of which it is an aspect in its effects in the phenomenal world. Our title this morning is The Theosophical Movement Throughout History.
Thank you. The traditional approach to this subject matter would likely bring our minds to focus on all of the historical examples of the Theosophical movement that we can recall together. In some ways, that would be like looking at the trees and missing the forest. So let's for a moment turn our minds to the greater picture of the Theosophical movement across time, or duration, if you will, before we consider historical examples together. In other words, we're using universals and then proceeding to particulars. Our reading this morning focused us on the nature of karma, an aspect of the absolute, the second of three fundamental propositions upon which the philosophy is based. And this concept of karma, that something comes forward from the absolute in a periodicity, a cycle of cause and effect, if you will, in the human kingdom, karma and reincarnation would be the concepts, but this idea of a universal ongoing cycle of impulse, action, reaction is all important as we look at the grand picture of the Theosophical movement. Theosophy, the Theosophical movement in the historical period and before, is not the same thing as the Theosophical Society or the United Lodge of Theosophists. Rather, it is a movement. It is a swelling up, if you will, of karmically enriched and induced efforts. It's continuous and it's universal. Theosophy is defined certainly as the wisdom religion. It is a combination or a synthesis, if you will, of spirituality or religion, of science, of philosophy. It is not a faith. It is not a dogma. It's not a creed. It's not any of the institutions that may arise in order to study it. But rather, it is a scope of divine wisdom that is impacted in the true nature of eternal beingness. It is said that theosophy, divine wisdom, springing up in the human kingdom, takes the form of the voice of the silence, the intuition, the discussion between an eternal, soulful point of view and the lower mind or personality. Theosophy has its incarnations or a period of activity when mind can bring it forth. It has its periods of rest when it seems clouded or hidden from the scene, if you will. But wherever the human mind and spirit struggles to be free, wherever you can trace in history and prehistory an effort to have spiritual ideas, the law of universal justice, conscience, intuition directing human activity, wherever you see an evolution of human nature based on self-devised and self-fulfilled methods, independent activities, wherever that bubbles up throughout history, you can be sure that your study will take you into an analysis of the Theosophical movement. The call for help, the call of minds worried about the injustices that they see in their environment, the call of hearts seeking compassion for times when really awful things seem to happen to really good people. The call for assistance of understanding and knowledge and wisdom as an ethical basis from which to act. All those calls impress all of manifestation and act as a magnetic connector, if you will, for kindred spirits, like minds, great minds, Mahatmas even. In the prehistorical time period, you can find traces of the Theosophical movement. In the time period of hunting, gathering, fishing, prior to farming, prior to the rise of the civilization of city-states, you can find art, architecture, legends, traces of oral history, information where humans made observations, considered the great essences of who am I, where am I going? Why am I going there? How am I going there? That kind of search for wisdom and experience is reflected in symbol, pictograph, glyph, and those are very, very inviting studies that you could proceed to do. You can even find those traces in pre-Columbian Western Hemisphere. But once we, as a human kind, reached a historical time period. Once you had the rise of farming and city-states and the development of writing, it becomes even easier to trace a line of thinking, to trace a pure and true effort that harkens back to certain basic premises, identical across time and across all places. Many times that can be found in reform movements where a great teacher or a sage has come forward in order to reform a religious institution or materialistic thinking or scientific or religious dogma, as it were. And so as we're considering karma and the role of the human mind as an agent for developing, creating, continuing, ameliorating karma, we can also begin to look at collective humankind as doing that same thing, only on a grander scale. And so if we premise that there is theosophy, there is divine wisdom, if we premise that it is human nature that brings forth the conditions through which theosophical thinking, spiritual thinking can develop and be expressed, we should be able, as individual students, to proceed along lines of study. And each of you is invited to look at the literature, both the public history. You can find cycles of history written by people like Dr. Toynbee. If you are looking for examples of reformers, great sages, Mahatmas that have come through the historical period, you can go all the way back to the Sankhya doctrine and Krishna and Buddha in India. If you are more European bent, more classically Western civilization bent, and you would want to look into these ideas, you could look at the roots of the European traditions in Egypt with Hermes Trismegistus, the Hermetic doctrine that was taught in Egypt. If you are really classical and you want to look at ancient Greece, you could, as an independent thinker, look up the mystery schools and the hierophants that taught through them. You could do a research, if you wanted, quote, light reading on the works of Plato and the other teachers of ancient Greece. If you would like to be rooted in the Christian tradition, you can look at the Sermon of the Mount taught by Jesus and find very definite theosophical tracings for a theosophical movement of how do we, as spirit, reside in a manifest world in order to accomplish service and altruism and universal brotherhood, pure goodness. There's also another study you could do for the theosophical movement across the historical time period. If you went back to the literature of Tibet and Asia and looked at the life and times of one known as Tsongkhapa, circa 1375 of the Common Era, you would look at the foundation, certainly, of yellow cap Buddhism and be interested in that. But there is also a parallel study in which late in the 14th century, the 1300s, this particular sage called together a brotherhood, a group of like-minded spirits in matter who were able to bring their mighty prowess and knowledge and wisdom to look at what would be coming in the tides of history, to look at karmic conditions that might be created by future men, and determine where and how, working within karma, to assist the theosophical movement. So this study is really fun because you could look at the last 25 years of every century since that meeting led by Tsongkhapa, and what you would be looking for is a spiritual impulse, a spiritual awakening that takes form, takes part in the manifest world, that struggles against dogma, struggles against materialism, looks at the social order of the time and says, wait a minute, where's equality? And so really, if you wanted to, you could look at each century as 75 years of prep work, of plowing the ground for the future work, and then the bloom of the last 25 years of any century as a time period of spiritual reform. And what do we find? Around 1475, the Renaissance is occurring in Europe. There's a reawakening of science and math that were so beautifully protected in the Arab world, in the Islamic traditions during the Dark Ages. There was a bloom, if you will, of the neoclassical, a new study again in humanism, going back to Alexandrian Egypt, going back to the sources of Greece and early Rome. If you look around the time period of 1575 in the 16th century, you're looking at the Protestant Reformation and certainly the Counter-Reformation within the Catholic Church. But there's much reading that can be done by many, many thinkers in that late 16th century, where the whole notion of what is it to be spiritual, what is it to truly worship, why should you be able to read for yourself, and what role should obedience to a religious leader take versus free thinking and reform. If you move forward into the late 1600s, 1675, the 17th century, you can find political reformations, the Age of Enlightenment, the Golden Age of Scientific Research, and you have all of this groundswell of information about the nature of great nature, the nature of the human being in a political and a social contract, and you have a situation where there's a new application of this struggle in the Western world that can certainly be traced through all sorts of historical documents. By 1775, you could look at American history. Make a study of the life of John Locke. Make a study of what it was that all these previous centuries, all these culminating final 25 years, culminated through the transcendental movements, through scientific research, etc., until finally there were revolutions, both here and in France, but in particular here, where the revolution looked like a conservative movement, but it was based on ideas that could continue to evolve. They couldn't reach the right compromise at that time period. The system is set up so that human liberty and the respect and toleration for others as equals could be expanded and enlarged and could continue on throughout the future. In 1875, the Theosophical movement took a really good turn. After all that work at the end of all those centuries, and after the rise of all these philosophical and poetic and artistic movements in the 1800s, we have the time period that was ripe karmically. The late 1800s in this country, especially with the rise of great cities, the incredible burst of immigration, the rise of industry, the beginnings of science testing the fact of whether there's actually physical solid nature or is there something else that's more ethereal and real. All of these forces in society were iced, as it were, as a cake would be iced, with H.P. Blavatsky, a Russian immigrant woman, making her way around the world, studying the ancient traces of theosophy and the theosophical movement, and then working with co-workers like William Q. Judge to bring the information forward, and for the first time, not to have a mystery school like in Greece, not to have an esoteric hidden from the public set of facts, but rather using all of the modern technology, we have pure literature gathered as best could be done in the late 1800s, and then published. Granted, in the late 1800s, it would be very, very difficult for the population to be able to buy books. Not everybody could read, not everybody could afford the books, but there were plenty of lecture halls that were booming at the time. If you fast forward to 1975, looking at the Theosophical movement, you see the flourishing of different institutions, centers like this one, the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia, where this information is preserved and protected, where it's made public as much as can be, and where the effort is ongoing to assist those other free thinkers, those other creative thinkers who would again invigorate the Theosophical movement. Some of you may also hearken back to New Age developments, scientific explorations and proofs that provided evidence that what was published in the late 1800s actually had tremendous truth and accuracy behind them. So the role now in the modern Theosophical movement in our lifetimes, and certainly working to plow the fields, if you will, prepare the groundwork for 2075, is for us to work on as companions to the masters, to maintain centers like this one, to preserve and publicize the philosophy, to create a magnetic center of universal brotherhood. And so we study to comprehend the true nature of self, to really make sure that what we're hearing in these rooms is truth. We look into and investigate as best we can. And in that way, we make our brains more porous so that intuitive nature can bubble through, can be reflected through the mind we're using. And that study, that collective study that we do week after week, colors all substances at all planes. It impresses the materials that can be used by future incarnations. So we study. We serve karma as best can be, attempting to be ever mindful, to note, to consider, and then to act for the welfare of each and all, as duty comes to us daily. We serve by applying the things that we've studied to see if they hold true in action, word and deed, to practice what we preach or what we hear talked about in these rooms, objectively, impersonally, calmly, purely. And so we stay calm, we hold fast, we go slow. We're starting the winter season this morning, and we hold a premise that as we make the individual effort to move forward, to keep the Theosophical movement going, the movement of all ages, this universal flow of spiritual ideation, we trust that karma will do the rest, working within the lines we've helped to lay down for 2075. And for those who will come after us. These are the lines that are pure and true that H.P. Blavatsky showed so clearly in the late 1800s, synthesizing everything that had come before and putting a light on the path for everything that could come in the future. I'm sure you came with ideas on this subject matter. Yes.
With the approach taken this morning, it seems clear that the Theosophical movement as it expresses itself is a continuity of cause and effect. So we were wondering, no one of us came to this lodge or to any Theosophical center by accident, by chance, that we could be able to trace in our own lives a kind of Theosophical history where even as children we began to question, and as we got older we investigated certain things, and that trace led us finally to these ideas.
It's an interesting statement. As we look around this room, periodically when we come together regionally with more than one lodge in attendance, we see this beautiful array of humanity coming together. A magnificence in that there are different folks from different conditions, family lines, religious backgrounds, economic lines, professional pursuits, artistic pursuits. And yet and still, each of these individual incarnations operating under law have produced the culminating effort that we come together to complement one another. Not to pay a compliment to, but rather to bring our strengths together and to work on together to try to figure out as best we can what the philosophy means and how we can apply that philosophy in daily life. And so each of us in a private time could really begin to think, how am I the microcosm for the macrocosm? If we premise the fact that there is a universal source and that periodically the manifestation of that theosophical source is expressed, and then it continues to evolve and culminate and enlarge and expand, but always around the same truths, we should be able to find that history in our own lives. As children, did we really belong to the family line we were in, or did we stand apart and observe and say, that makes sense, this doesn't? Were we already free thinkers? Were we already questioning what we were being taught? And was there already a voice that was sounding from within, from heart, from intuition? This is fair, this is not fair. How can I give and help? But that person's a taker. How do I make sure that I don't give too much? Those kinds of series of experiences following us through school, through professional lives, through family lives, through intellectual lives, through artistic lives, what we respond to in public media, brought us here together. No accident. Your hand is up. Yes.
You were saying about theosophy, where it took a long time to really get the movement started. But the main thing, where the problem really was at, was people of all different faiths, all different religions, had a problem putting aside differences to come together on one specific thing, was to help others, and in spite of your background, your economic structure, who you are, that was the biggest fight. Because I noticed with my own self, a lot of times, even in conversation, my answer might be different than the other person's answer, but I try to instruct them. I say, you are right, and I'm right too, because a lot of times your answer can be based upon your upbringing and your environment and where you learn in your situation. So a lot of times, to come together and put your differences aside is no right, no wrong. It's coming to be able to sit down
to a middle ground.
Right.
Theosophically, really, right from the beginning of human history, as we can find it, the wisdom was already there. Depending on the geographic environment and the climate, we can find varying architecture and art forms, philosophical points of view. The Nile flooded regularly. The Egyptian philosophy very early on was one of abundance and optimism. The Tigris-Euphrates flooded in a very intermittent and very violent, very vicious lifestyle. And the people along that river valley tended to have a very different philosophy from the Egyptians, pessimistic and combative, if you will. Be that as it may, around the world, If you look at architecture and art, you will see certain glyphs, circles, circles with points in the middle, triangles, squares, lines, straight lines, curvy lines. You'll see symbols of thinking that appear universal. Across time, once there was the development of religious institutions and there was a desire or an impulse among some to control and to organize and to govern human beings, it's true, dogma arose and threw a veil across the eternal ideas that had previously been held by hunters, gatherers, and very early farmers. Be that as it may, even in today's world where we have the original teaching of a particular entity, a particular human being, a great soul who came to a group of people to reform their life practice and their spiritual ideation, then thereafter the disciples or the followers created something very different. If we can look at all of the world religions back behind the rites, the rituals, the creeds, the dogmas, frankly, the prejudice and the bigotry, if we could get behind that and look at the original scriptural teachings, we do find universal ideas, do we not? We find the notion of the oneness of all life, of an unknowable deific essence behind any personal God idea. You find cause and effect. You find the call to be charitable, to be altruistic. And in that way, using certain eternal ideas, we can find middle ground, not relative truth, not I'm okay, you're okay, so you can go ahead and kill somebody to convert them, not that. But we can find the middle ground, the root of the theosophical movement that's right below that surface. Yes, way in the back.
Well, you know, we were thinking during a great catastrophe, people will come rushing in, some with knowledge, some not, but the idea of the oneness of pushing together. A lot of people are involved in this, and one wonders, how can they do this? And yet, we see it, whether it's here in the States, in Europe, in Africa, there's always that pull to try to help innate within them.
Yeah, and our first responders certainly are folks that have been trained on how to listen to that instinct and that call, that inner drive, and to proceed forward to help. And it is true. We have at our avail, for the first time in history that we are aware of, more communication of ideas and events and happening. And usually the response is not, God, this is so awful, I can't stop watching. That's not the response. You watch small children, and their response is somebody fix it. Somebody big fix this. And also, and as we see the record of these horrible tragedies that may happen from time to time, we see this inner call, this intuitive, instinctive, I have to help. It is, we are one, and I've got to help. Unfortunately, our modern communication devices are also highlighting areas in which there's great growth needed, in that we see some of our first responders not following that instinct in every situation.
We think that we were listening to the radio on the way in this morning, and we heard a very astounding fact that really made us pause, and that is this week the Colombian government signed a peace treaty with certain rebel factions, and for the first time in a very violent, war-torn areas. So the planet is a much, now we have our problems obviously, but the planet right now is a much less violent place than it was even 50 years ago. So we have a lot of good things to work with right now too.
Thank you for sharing that, because too often, in order to sell newspapers, in order to sell magazines, and increasingly to make money from blogs or to make money from Facebook entries or electronic devices, or to make money for selling advertisements on television and radio, it is the catastrophic, it is the tremendously violent that is getting the focus. And in that way, as we heard in the original reading, if that's where we allow our minds to continually turn toward the rare individual that is doing some violent act, toward small groups who would do small events in order to disrupt the whole, we can control and offset that by turning our minds back to the truth of the Western Hemisphere for the first time in over 50 years is totally at peace. What a wonderful thing to focus on and to hold our minds on. All we have to do is a little bit of legwork to use our minds and to pursue avenues of learning so that we can remain optimistic and impress all of life with our thinking. Yeah.
Getting back to what you were saying, you was talking about all different religions and different rituals of different people's philosophies. My studies in different religions too, also, every religion originally starts off as being good until it falls into the hands of a person that misused their power.
Power, politics, and religion. Money, if you will. There's that materialistic hook, or the materialistic potential in the personal life that is certainly possible. And we can trace that again in our own lives, in our dealings with other people, and certainly in our major institutions, whether they're governmental, religious, political, financial, banking, whatever. There is the potential in the personal, self-centered illusion of it's I, me, my against the whole world, and I'm going to get mine in this one life that I have to live. Or worse, how do I use my animal magnetism in order to control and manipulate and direct others to do my will? So that's a possibility. But as free thinkers, we can rise above that. We can rise above all traces of that and say, whoa, there it is outside, or gee, isn't that similar to something that I might do habitually without thinking? And then rise above it, make note of it, understand the underpinnings of it, and then transmute it into a higher spiritual value. Not I, me, my, but we. Not just one, but the greater one of all. Yeah.
As presented, even though the theosophical movement can express itself in the physical world as political, as social, financial, religious reform, isn't it true that there can't be any real change, lasting change, unless we change our ideas first? We just can't get improvement by working with the outer conditions, in other words.
Yeah, there is a religious leader this week who is talking about just that issue, that the effect of ideas and ideology is actually something that will control and convert and create change in the future. Is there anything in our individual lives or collective lives that doesn't first start with an idea. Ideas rule the world. And the ideas that we hold, if off premise a little bit, if not eternally true, they're colored with maybe some selfish motives or ignorance the illusion of separateness, if you will. And so the actions that follow from the basis of that idea or thought may be askew. It may not be directly online with truth or the theosophical movement. So it's key. The reading this morning talked about he who unveils through study and meditation karma's intricate paths and throws light on those dark ways in the windings of which so many men perish owing to their ignorance of the labyrinth of life, he is working for the good of his fellow men. So key is to contemplate the ideas that we hold each day. Start out the day with a tone for the day that is as universal, as peaceful, as optimistic, as all-inclusive as we possibly can imagine. And then lead our life that day by brief periods of meditation. It only takes about 20 seconds, really, if you think about it. I'm not talking about meditating for hours at a time, but we're traveling along through the course of the morning and something happens and we have an aha moment. Oh, that was a selfish thought. Don't want to go there. What triggered that? Let's get back on the right path. Boy, that sounded like an angry thought. That's not for me. How can I turn my mind back to a new perspective, a better perspective, a spiritual perspective? So it is in that way, whether we are book study and life study, that we turn ourselves by meditation into serving the all. If indeed the premise that human nature is spirit is a tremendously creative dynamo and force of nature, then what each of us holds as an idea, refines it as an idea, projects, radiates, transmits, however you want to think it, impresses substance with that sacred idea, then peace and celebration in a whole hemisphere is definitely possible. Yeah.
So, in the lecture, basically we went from 1375 to 1975, which the last part of each, the last quarter of each century, there's that impulse. Yeah. And with Tsongkhapa gathering the adepts together to take the first steps, and of course, like a century later, in Italy, there was the ancient Greek wisdom was accessed. Universal principles were coming to the forefront again. So the church was already losing some of its power. But it's interesting when we get to 1675 and 1775. Really, right here in Philadelphia, for two centuries in a row, there was quite an impulse that was put forth with William Penn and his religious tolerance, his experiment of brotherly love, and of course Thomas Paine with his with his writings, sowing the seeds for the free expression of ideas that we have today. So it's a series of progressive awakenings.
Yes.
In a sense.
It's a good term.
And with the Theosophical movement, with the public expression of it in 1875, we finally have a counterbalance to the materialism, because we were really sliding down that road. And now in 1875, then we finally had the Eastern wisdom. We had, came full cycle. The wave came, in a sense, the way we see it, don't know if this is right, but that the true Eastern teachings, it took about 500 years to wash on our shores here. In full bloom, finally.
And the Eastern teachings was what continued to be veiled from so many of the Western thinkers. If you go back to the Dark Ages of Europe, in which there was that incredible control and the creation and the continuation of ignorance among the masses. At the same time, in North Africa and the Middle East, there was a tremendous period of math, of science, of art, of great literature, of tremendous wisdom across the ages that was being preserved. The Greek Renaissance, the Greek Revival that happened in the Italian Renaissance was actually Eastern also, because the Alexandrian or the Hellenistic information is what was being brought forward into Europe at the same time. And certainly that's a tremendous bloom, if you will. In 1875, the piece that was still missing in Western cultural thought or Western heritage was karma, reincarnation, and the true teachings of the ethics behind those phenomena. So in many ways, the theosophical movement, that internal impulse resident in each human that was bubbling up in the late 1800s, included psychism, spiritualism. It included the possible dogma of science as the new religion, if you will, or the worship of money as the new religion. And therefore, this reform movement of bringing in the Eastern religions and having them side by side with Western streams of thought, the seeds were planted, the ideas were planted that can now continue to bloom. And that is not to say everybody in the East was hearkening to the eternal truths. There was a lot of perversity going on with their ancient teachings that had also been twisted and abused in order to control and direct the masses. Way, way in the back.
Is that what they call the lost cord of Christianity?
Reincarnation is called the lost cord of Christianity. In today's world, we can look at the Essenian Gospels, the Gnostic Gospels. We can look at comparative religious studies among ancient Hebrews, the early Christians, who of course were themselves truly Hebrews. And we can look at all that information and realize that you can find reincarnation extant and very, very well 2,000 years ago, over 2,000 years ago, as a commonality of ideas held and acted upon and believed in and tested and verified in that cradle of civilization that we call the Middle East, North Africa. It's the later imposition of the will of others and the editing of ancient texts and the omissions so that control could be had over a group of people that veiled it. But again, those ideas came forward in the theosophical movement in the late 1800s here on this continent. They were already here among the indigenous people. The deep, deep tragedy is that the indigenous people that inhabited this continent, living close to the earth, had brought from Asia with them many of these ancient ideas and teachings and traditions, and we can still see them in the exoteric symbols that Anglos or Westerners are allowed to observe at powwows. We certainly don't see the inner workings of the indigenous peoples and their teachings, but it can be still seen. It was just a deep, deep tragedy that things unfolded the way they did on this continent. Well, we may have a lot more interweaving of ideas and truths. Yeah.
Well, meeting began with the, or in the presentation rather, the invitation was extended to so many lines of independent individual study we could do in terms of the varieties of the Theosophical movement's expression. If that's the reality, why in ULT do we focus then on the teachings as written by, put down by William Q. Judge and HPB? Why don't we go, why don't we just study all these trends equally?
Well, as independent thinkers, we certainly have every freedom to do an eclectic study. And we are advised to have an open mind as independent thinkers to read, observe, to learn, and to then distill what we're learning and bring it back and verify it, to test it by the fundamental propositions of the philosophy. Continue that creative process. But also in the talk, the point was made that the Theosophical movement is not the Theosophical Society, it is not the United Lodge of Theosophists. The Theosophical movement is a timeless duration of spiritual ideas impacted within the human spirit, occasionally expressed and shared in the manifest world. And the straight line of those Theosophical ideas, without any side issues, without any veiling, without any perversity or twisting for power or purpose, the straight line was reestablished and given to the world in the late 1800s by Blavatsky and Judge as a co-worker. We should be able to go through the secret doctrine, Isis Unveiled, the Key to Theosophy, the Ocean of Theosophy, any of the pamphlets, and look at an article and then research the statement made to make sure that the footnotes are accurate, to make sure that the statement is true. That's the invitation, to think about the words we read, to read into intuitively and interpret the words, not to memorize, not to have a dogma, not to have a chant, but rather to have a creative process with what is truly a straight line. And if we can use those Theosophical propositions and what was published in facsimile in the books that we have at our avail, if we can take that as a ruler and place it alongside the prehistoric architecture, art, and symbol, if we can pick it up and place it alongside any religion, any science, any philosophy, any innovative thought or apparent creative thought, we can begin to see that that Theosophical movement is one continuous stream, unalterable, and so we hold at ULT that we stay with that original line of thinking and not expand, enlarge, drive people off it. No. Keep that line of thinking and those ideas steady, steadfast, and true for any newcomer who's coming to the cause. This is not the world according to the rubber ruler or the elastic band. It's the world according to an ethical, spiritual, eternal ruler. Well, we are out of time, but we would remind you that at the book table there is a Judge pamphlet number 3, if you'd like to look at that, about the Theosophical movement. We're going to be studying the Key to Theosophy, and these ideas will be delved into with far more detail through the coming year. But there are also other series of things you can look at. Other students have published series of articles, Ancient Landmark series, the Great Theosophist theories. There's lots and lots of literature to help you on your way as you examine these ideas for truth. Have a great day and a